everyone, and welcome to Minute 7 of Season 8 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg-directed award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me on this Tuesday during Week 2 is my guest from last week, Jay Cluid. Welcome back, Jay.
Thank you. I'm back for a water-based minute.
That is correct. I was thinking that when I was doing all my prep for this episode. I was like, wow, if of all things that I could switch Jay with, yep. You know, to give him this scene,
the wet minute
is something that was just great for him. You know. So yes, we will get there. We will get there. So minute 7 begins with a shot of the German viewpoint of the battle. And ends with Miller still trying to get ashore. So yesterday we talked about the opening volley of this particular battle. Things got really, really gruesome, but it's only going to get more gruesome. But we talked about the gruesome stuff yesterday. Today we get to talk about water. You know, we see that, Sergeant Miller, Captain Miller just grabs one of his men and screams, "Over the side!" He's trying to just save his men as much as possible.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he does a nice job of that. That's right. That's right. We talked about it last week that these Higgins boats, you know, weren't the smartest things if you're opening the front.
Yeah, it feels better to, like, How do we fix it? How do we fix it? Okay, they could have reversed, and all come out the back. I guess it's further to swim. They could have had.
Well, that wouldn't be good for the driver. The driver would probably, you know, the coxswain would get his head blown off. Probably.
Right. Well, that's only if he sticks it out. If they can reinforce the driver's cabin, and make it so he doesn't go stick his head out the top, then that would be better. You could have a system where the bottom just drops out. And everyone just drops into the water from below the boat. I guess that's a way of doing it.
What surprises me, and we touched upon it yesterday, is that don't you think they would have planned this a little better, knowing that this is what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean hindsight's 20/20, so it's a wonderful thing. But this isn't the best plan. But in the heat of the moment, you're being shot at. This is the best they could do. And you got to feel sorry for the guys who drown because they were not prepared for this at all.
Right.
I feel sorry for all of them, of course. But the guy who's...
Yeah.
If we just see his literal last breath as he's weighed down.
Yeah. I mean, again... This goes back to why this movie is so amazing. I mean, just this entire minute, we're going to be seeing, the battle underwater of how it all, continues and stuff like that. I mean, Miller starts trying to get his men up, and like one of the men, he gets them to stand up, and then he gets shot like right in front of him. You know, these guys are just getting mowed down really quickly. And then, Miller screams, "Port and starboard, over." And, at this point, the camera movement is constantly, moving back and forth. Really gives us the impression that we are right there watching all this happen. And there are explosions happening in front. And, we see a whole bunch of soldiers that are wading in. And then we see a bunch of soldiers, including Miller, that jump into the water. But what surprises me, and you're more of a water fan or mortar water expert than I am.
Sure.
But how is it that just a few feet above in front, these guys are walking, but here these guys are falling into very, very deep water. I mean, the drop off must be amazing at that point.
I think so. And well, we're not because the Czech hedgehogs are going to be sat on the sand just below the water. So, yeah, I mean, some beaches, they drop off pretty sharply. There tends to be signs up, but then the signs are if you're approaching from the beach rather than from the water. So these guys, the soldiers, can't see the signs that would warn them of a sharp drop off, which I'm assuming aren't there. So yeah, I think that's fair. Like, the guys were like stumbling along. Well, I mean, it wouldn't take that deep of water to drown you if you got a heavy pack on either.
No, but these guys are just far below the surface. No, they're further down than below the surface.
The ones who are getting shot, the ones who are shot under the water, you can. I think they are just below the surface. I think they're like a foot, maybe 2 feet below. They're not far below. No one's like standing fully standing upright either, underwater.
Okay, but you think this is something that they could have been standing? I mean, the two guys, there are two guys who get shot. And we see like the blood splurting out of them.
Yeah.
You know, underwater. They look like they're standing. So now I know you like to check about water depth and stuff like that. Did you by any chance check how deep the water might be around the Normandy beaches?
You know, I didn't think to. No, sorry.
So I did, the answer that I got was that most of the water around the beach is neck deep.
Okay, sure. You can drown in neck deep.
But I know you can. You can drown in a puddle.
Yeah.
But my point is that it doesn't look here as if you know, these guys could all stand up and they'd be out of the water. That's my point.
To a point where it becomes deeper than that, and they're at that point yet. I guess maybe the boats pulled in far enough so that when they open the back doors, the soldiers can get out and walk, not thinking like they were not going to do that. They're going to jump over the side a few meters back.
Right. I mean, again, the research that I did, it shows that most of the Higgins craft got stuck in sandbars 50 to 100 yards out from the edge of the beach. And then the men had to then wade through the water, sometimes at neck deep depths, and they had to cross like 200 yards and stuff like that to get to shore. And then beyond that, you know, they had to still once they got to shore, they needed to then get to cover somewhere. You know, as we talked about last week, the Czech hedgehogs aren't really gonna save people. You know, it's not the easiest thing to hide behind.
Yeah.
Especially if you're more than one person. One person, maybe you could get together, which we'll talk about as we go through the way these things go. But, you know, to me, it just sounds, it seems as if the water is deeper here. So I don't know. But again, you're more of an expert on deep water things than I am. So, you know, I thought maybe you would have checked how deep or blue this movie is.
The whole movie. Neither deep nor blue. I think this correct. Is probably the bluest minute.
and that's why you're here.
Coincidence, yes.
Well, you know, you could call it coincidence. Sure. It could be divine providence. You know, you never know. Then there's one guy who's you know, trying to you know, get he's being weighed down by all of his pack, and you know, he's trying to take off his pack or whatever it is, and we see he's like talking or trying to talk, and he's gasping for air. You see like little bubbles come out of his mouth before he eventually just dies, suffocates, drowns, whatever you want to call it. Again, showing the realism that, you know, even though these people are all underwater, they're not safe. You know, I always thought as a kid, I don't know why, that if you're underwater and someone shoots a bullet into it, then you won't get hit with the bullet. Because, you know, in most movies, you know, people, when they're underwater, they're able to avoid the bullets. And you see the bullets go by and stuff like that. You know, I always thought that it makes the bullets slower and stuff.
It does make them slower.
Not enough.
Not enough. Yeah, they're not going to bounce off. I mean, at some point, they would. No, yeah, if your only protection is you're harder to see and harder to aim at.
Yeah.
You can still die.
That's right. Which is what this minute proves. You know, again, we talked last week about all the people that are buried, you know, in the cemetery there. So even a guy like this who's just drowning, he wasn't in combat. He doesn't die in combat, but he dies drowning, and that's
this not count as dying in combat.
it's still part of. No, they will say that he died in combat. You know,
but he did. How is he not dying in combat?
No, I know that, but I'm saying his family will get a letter saying your son died heroically in battle or whatever it is. But what happened was is he had too many things in his backpack. You know, that's what it comes down to in this particular case.
Yeah.
You know, he's gonna get his award, he's gonna get his but what they're showing us here is the realism that not everyone who died on Normandy Beach was gonna die from wounds inflicted by the enemy, I guess you could say.
Sure. Okay.
You know, there were the fact that they show this here, I mean, we know that Steven Spielberg and Rodat, they did extensive research and they interviewed a lot of veterans from D-Day just to get an idea of all the stuff that's going on and stuff like that. And they were applauded by many D-Day veterans about how realistic and scary they made this. Montgomery Scott was there. James Doohan. James Doohan, I think his name is.
James Doohan, yeah. You've seen far more than I have. I've seen the films once. The TV show, not at all.
Okay. That is true. That is true. But so James Doohan was actually he fought in D-Day on Juno Beach. And I always find this fascinating. He lost his middle finger on his right hand during the battle. And I've never seen that finger missing, you know, on any Star Trek TV show or film. You just don't notice it, even though he's only got four fingers on one hand.
Well, you can still
study
an engine.
So
that's
right. So he actually commended Spielberg for not leaving out any of the gory details and to show everything as it really was. So it's always amazing to think about that fact, about how the fact that this movie is so realistic because they want to honor the men that were there. You know, by showing that this is really what people had to go through to fight for freedom. You know, that type of thing. And then we start coming up out of the water. You know, we see the legs of men running through the water, which shows that there are areas, obviously, where you can stand up. And I love what they do, how, first of all, you see the way that these men are running in the water, and they have to, like, run over, or they keep bumping into different helmets of other soldiers who've, you know, been in the water and stuff like that. And the way that they take the camera out of the water, and then it goes back under the water, and then out of the water, and under the water, you know, showing it again that the tide is still moving and stuff like that, and you know that this it shows how difficult it was for these soldiers to actually get on the beach.
Yeah, and the sound changing above and below the water is a great way of emphasizing that as well, because you're obviously going to hear it differently. We talk that kind of thing over on TVC's podcast. We just did an episode on The Strangers Pray at Night, the swimming pool scene, where the same thing happens, because there's like Total Eclipse of the Heart is playing loudly on speakers above the pool, and you go into the pool and you can't hear it. It's muted. So that kind of thing is really well used. It's a great way it's a great thing to use in wet scenes where you're going above and below the water.
Correct. Yeah. And then we see someone carrying someone else, you know, like dragging them, trying to help them out of the water, pulling them along the whole way, the two guys are together. And, you know, you can't tell. It is meant to be Miller is one of them, but you can't really tell at this point. You know, it's something that it will take us till tomorrow to really find it out. But we see, you know, bodies of men just lying on, the Czech hedgehogs, people hiding behind it. You see water splashing all around them. Again, they give us such an amazing viewpoint of this entire battle. You know, there are explosions. We hear bullets whizzing around and everything like that. Bullets hitting off the hedgehogs also. It's just great. It's pure chaos, which is what it's meant to be.
Oh, this must have been so much work was so much preparation involved in setting up this scene. I think there's so much going on.
Well, from what I understand, it took them like a month to film this, and they filmed it in sequential order.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just so there's so much going on every shot. The shot, the sets, are, well, it's not. It's all so deep. Like the whole beach is being used. Like, as yeah, there's so much. It's so impressive. I can't understand how people that were there were so impressed with it all. Like the depiction, it's beyond words. I can't even. It's just such a
exactly. That's sequence. That's you know this the 25 minutes. The first 25 minutes of this movie is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because of that. It's just the way, I mean, we're obviously over the next few weeks, we're going to go through it all, but it's just amazing the way that it's all depicted. I love it. You know, I saw this movie when it came out in the theater. And then a few weeks later, a friend of mine called me up. One of my best friends from seventh grade, we were best friends. We're not in touch as much as we used to, unfortunately. But at the time, he called me up and said, "Have you seen Saving Private Ryan?" I said, "Yeah, sure." He's like, "You want to go see it again with me?" And I'm like, "Oh, I saw it." And he goes, "You will never get the experience. You'll probably in your life never get the experience again to watch it in the theater if you don't go see it again now." And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I went to go see it with him, and we were once again blown away by the thing. And he was right, because it's been, you know, 26 years, and I still haven't seen it in the theater again.
I've
been hoping to. I've been hoping to see it in the theater again, but and this is also from because of my background and my friend's background. We were both, you know, we both served in the military as infantrymen, and so. Watching this type of scene as an infantryman is horrendous because you realize what one goes through, you know, during a battle like this, because they really put you right there. You know, it doesn't matter how much training you've gone through and everything like that. When you're in a situation like this, you know, you're going to have to act differently, and you're going to have to figure out how to survive.
I'd never intend to be in such a situation.
No, I know that. I'm aware that because you're up them. you're up them. You just grab your pencil and you'll be fine.
No, I'll take the typewriter.
You'll take the typewriter? I don't think you're going to take the typewriter because they won't let you take the typewriter. But you can take the Nazi helmet. A wonderful
bit of physical comedy.
You can
of all the films you expect to see, like a Keaton-esque physical comedy routine, Saving Private Ryan, not one of them.
No.
I'm so happy it's there.
No. That's right. And they do it two in a row, because first he takes the typewriter, and then he takes the German helmet.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and he's like, and you can see how calm Miller is during this whole thing. You know, he's taking his time.
He's good with dealing with little kids, and Upham's being a kid, basically.
That's true.
So
that's true. It's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And we hear bullets ricocheting, you know, as the minute ends. But we see also Miller trying to get ashore. Will he make it? Will he get gunned down? Who knows?
Only time will tell.
That's right. Okay, so do you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Jay?
No, I don't. I think that's it. Yeah. Good luck, everyone in the water and out of the water, and yeah, everyone involved. Good luck.
That's right. Okay. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So I know you've been waiting a really long time to tell us this, and I know that Jurassic Park will not be on this list. So.
Well, you think that. You say that. I'll find a way. So
I'm sure you will.
I did a list of my top five Tom Hanks movies and performances, but you want performances, I'll do performances. So my number five is Bridge of Spies, which I think is another underrated Spielberg Hanks film. I really enjoy My main appreciation for Hank's performance in this, in Bridge of Spies, is the development of having a cold. So he starts out not having a cold, and he gradually gets one. He has one. He passes it on. Doesn't have it at the end, which is just an illness arc over the film that I really appreciate. On top of everything else he's doing. So Bridge of Spies for number 5, Tom Hanks' performance. Number 4, I love all of the Toy Story films. I had to have one on my list. I think Toy Story 2 is the one that he gets the most to do, the best performance in, because that's a very Woody-centric story, which I think I prefer 1 and 3 as films over 2, but I think 2 has the best Tom Hanks performance in it.
Okay.
Number 3 is this one, Saving Private Ryan. He's excellent in it. He is quite good in this film. All throughout, as we've talked about, as you will continue to talk about, he's just very good. Well, number 2 is a little film called Big. I really enjoy Big as a film. Tom Hanks is wonderful in it. He perfectly embodies being a child. The piano sequence is just one of my favorite scenes of all time. I will happily just watch that scene and just make me feel better.
Even though, which is really... really surprising, because you don't like kids and you don't like music.
Yeah, that's true. But there's no kids in that scene. He's an adult. He's just, there's a kid inside him. But it's just, there's just the joy of two grown men playing a big floor piano. I don't know. It's fun. And number 1 is Captain Phillips, which I think is his best performance, especially the last like 5 minutes. It's a real gut punch, but all throughout that film, he's excellent, and just caps off. I don't think he was nominated for that.
I think he was, actually.
Because I heard he didn't win.
No, he definitely didn't win.
I was annoyed at who did win. I forget who that may have been. I don't have this in front of me. He was not nominated. An Academy Award.
That's right. He was between 2001 and 2020. He wasn't nominated for anything. You're right.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey won for Dallas Buyers Club. Tom Hanks was better than Christian Bale in American Hustle. He was better than, in my opinion, DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. I'm fine with Chiwetel Ejiofor being nominated. I'm fine with McConaughey being nominated. And yeah, Bruce Dern nomination. That's fine. But I think Hanks should have been in there above Bale or DiCaprio. And possibly even one, because I think he is exceptional in Captain Phillips. So that is my number 1. And if you want to know my top 5 Tom Hanks movies, then it's Turner and Hooch number 5, number 4 is Big, number 3 is Apollo 13, number 2 is Saving Private Ryan, number 1 is Toy Story 3. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, performances makes more sense from this perspective. I'm actually surprised that I thought you liked Forrest Gump more.
No.
You hate Forrest Gump.
I don't hate Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is a film that I used to love and I've grown tired of, I will say. I think it's as years go on, I like it less and less. I think he's good in it. I don't know if it's Oscar material. I think today it definitely wouldn't be.
Well, because today they would say, oh, you can't make a movie like that.
Yes, and I feel like that is maybe the correct response to Forrest Gump.
Well, from what I understand, how bad the novel is, you got to give him a lot of credit for making something palatable from it.
Yes, or you could talk to the guys from Forrest Gump Minute, and who I think started out some of them liking that film and ended up not. I think the more time you spend looking close.
Okay, but that was the Midnight. That was the Midnight
Boys. That was the Midnight Boys. Yes, sure.
Yeah. I never got a chance to listen to them doing Forrest Gump, but I think they did it. Didn't they do it segment?
Did it 4 minutes at a time. They did four wrist gump minute. Four.
Okay, exactly. No, like I know that they. I binged all of their Titanic minute stuff, which I loved.
Yeah, me too.
Which there they started with one of them not liking it, and then he ended up liking the movie at the end. So, I guess it works both ways. Sometimes doing a movie this way will make you like it more, and sometimes it'll make you like it less. Thankfully, I've yet. Too. That's right. Thankfully, I've yet to come across a movie that I've done that I've enjoyed less now that I've gone through it. So,
well, maybe if you do Die Hard 4 and 5, you'll like them more.
No, well, I didn't say liking more. I'm talking about liking less.
Yeah, I'm talking about liking more. Maybe this is because you said sometimes you like them more, sometimes you like them less. Maybe that's how you'll learn to love a good day to Die Hard, is you cover it minute by minute for too long.
I think I'll leave you to do that. No, I'm thinking we'll see. We'll see. We'll have to wait and see what's happening. So, Jay, do you have anything else you want to say about this movie in general?
One other story I have about Saving Ryan is the first 20 times I watched it, I don't know, I watched this film a lot as a kid, I really understood the scene where Wade dies, where Giovanni Ribisi dies, which I think we've talked about before, but because he dies and he says, like, tell us how to fix you. And he's like, give me a morphine, because he's bleeding out. And there's like, how can we fix you? He's like, give me another morphine. And so, what do we do? And he's like, you can give me another morphine. And there's like a look between the other guys. It's like, what are we doing here? And I understand it now as them looking at each other like, if we give him another morphine, he's just going to kill him. He wants to die. And it's that is their look. And I had always misread that look as being, why are we wasting the morphine on this dying guy?
Well, I think I gotta say, I mean, again, I'm months away from getting there, but my opinion on that now is it's a little bit of both. It's okay. One, this guy is dying anyway. He knows he's dying. You know, if we give him more morphine, we're gonna have less morphine by us. And you know, they have to get the nod of approval to give him another morphine. But on the other hand, as you said, you can also look at it from the perspective that, okay, he's saying, just make it quicker for me. You know, let me overdose.
So maybe it is supposed to be seen in both directions, but I had always definitively like, it's just the wasting of the morphine.
Right. Exactly. I was
a child brain.
That's right. I'm always waiting for Ryben to say, why are you giving him all that morphine?
Yeah. Hey, save some for me.
He's the only guy who doesn't need it. Actually, Upham doesn't get injured either. So there you go. There's two guys that make it out without being injured at all. Actually, Ryan also doesn't get injured. He just, we see him, in a fetal position, crying and screaming, which doesn't make any sense.
Mentally injured. Emotionally scarred.
Emotionally scarred because all these people died for him. But,
no, because he's in a freaking war.
That too. It's a combination of both.
Sure.
All right. So, Jay, would you like for one final time till hopefully the final episode, if I don't need you off the bench sometime over the course of the next 160 some odd episodes, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
You can find me over at Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, where my co-host Mark and I have been to the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy scene by scene. We're doing it again. So the episode that came out last week was Deep Blue Sea 1, Chapter 5, which is when we first meet Preacher. That's a fun scene. No, it's not. It's the one. No, that's next week. No, it's when we first, like, Russell and Janice are going down an elevator and talking about Aquatica. It's lots of exposition. Chapter 5. And this week, the episode comes out tomorrow, is on Night Swim, the haunted swimming pool film from earlier this year with Wyatt Russell and Kerry Condon, which is a fun film. Check out Night Swim. Right. So that's what's coming up on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Cool.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. Or if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Jay, thank you very much for joining me for this these five episodes, even though they were broken up a little bit. But you got your underwater stuff, so I think that works.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And I will be back tomorrow with Alan will be back tomorrow with me. But until then, earn this.
In my solitude.